Good morning. 8 minutes after 6 o'clock. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on the morning show on WPR. Coming up, we'll get a pair of perspectives on cultural appropriation as it applies to children and Halloween costumes. We'll start with a couple of guests who work on ways to talk about issues of race with your children. Parents, are you letting your kids dress up as Moana for Halloween today? Why or why not? Is it appropriation for a white child to dress up as a Polynesian character? And what is appropriate or inappropriate on Halloween? Or is all of this just too much political correctness on a holiday that's meant to be fun? 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, the number to call to join the program. You can also send an email to ideas@WPR.org. Post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. My first guests are Sashi Ferris, principal blogger, blog editor, and workshop facilitator for Raising Race-Conscious Children, an online resource for talking about race with young children. Her blog post that caught our attention is titled Moana, Elsa, and Halloween. Also joining me in this segment is Lori Taliaferro-Riddick, manager of partnerships and programs, blogger and workshop facilitator for Raising Race-Conscious Children. Sashi and Lori, welcome to the morning show. Thanks for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much for having us.
Sashi, let's start with you. I understand that this persona, this Moana persona, is something of an issue for you. Your daughter wanted to dress up as Moana next Halloween. She wanted to dress up, I think, maybe I've got this wrong, but you have reservations about that. What was your reaction when your daughter told us she wanted to be Moana for Halloween?
You know, I just want to backtrack, because I want to answer your question, but I want to backtrack to a more everyday stance, because the world that our children see every day is a world that is unjust and inequitable. And my children see that world every single night at bedtime, because the statistics about the children's book industry tell us that books still published today in the children's book industry are books with majority white characters and majority white main characters. And when I see those books every night with my children, because even though I take great care to curate our personal library, those are still the majority of the books they see. So when I see that book and I'm reading with my children, I say, look at this. I notice that most of the characters in this book have pale skin that we call white. And, you know, when I see a book like this, I think to myself, this doesn't look very much like our neighborhood or the school you go to where there are people with all different colors, skin colors. And I say, you know, that doesn't seem fair to me. I don't like that this book is only showing people with one color skin, with white skin. And I say that because my silence on that subject would also be sending very powerful messages. It would be sending a message that I don't want my child to receive, that white is normal and that white is better. And so on Halloween, to go back to your question, it's really the same thing. I just want my daughter to be a person who is going to be asking questions and thinking critically about the impact of her costume choice on others. And that is the most important piece for us at Raising Race Conscious Children at raceconscious.org. We want children to be able to talk about issues of racial injustice, because if they cannot talk about these issues, they are not going to be empowered to create a more just world. And that is our main goal in these conversations.
Okay. So let's go back then to when your daughter is exposed to the popular culture, Disney movies and so forth. She saw Elsa and she saw Moana and she wanted to dress up as one and then the other. What was your reaction when your daughter gave you this bit of information?
Yeah, so again, and my blog post really talks about our conversation. That's really our whole goal, is to be providing samples of conversations so that parents who want to have these conversations have some actual language and resources to do so, because it's hard and it's not how we were raised necessarily in a society that still is colorblind. But essentially, you know, I asked questions. It wasn't just a thing, oh, great, you're going to dress up as Elsa this year and Moana next year. Terrific. You know, I wanted her to be thinking about what it means to dress up as, in terms of Elsa, a character that is representing our quote-unquote normal standards of what we should strive for beauty. And even though my daughter is white, that is not an image that coincides with how she looks. You know, she's a short hair, brown haired girl. I don't want her necessarily, of course, to strive to a body type that is damaging for young women's self-esteem, et cetera. So this is a harmful image as a white, long-haired, blonde-haired, blue-eyed person as the standard of beauty. That hurts my daughter, too, even though we're white. So, you know, even with that character choice, there were things I wanted to talk to her about because I wanted her to know that she didn't have to have a long, blonde, white braid to be Elsa, that Elsa could be a character with short brown hair, too. And in the case of Moana, I think the conversation was really about how can we dress as a person with another culture without making fun of that culture, without trying that culture on as a costume. And to do that, you know, in terms of even a quote-unquote store-bought costume, to me, it's a very fine line in this example, because it's very difficult to separate Moana from her culture. Mm-hmm. And it's just something I wanted to proceed with conversation and caution. I didn't know the answer before going into the conversation with my daughter. And it's possible that she could have created a costume with her own, you know, clothing, with a red T-shirt and a flowered skirt, and we could have built her a cardboard boat and a chicken sidekick, and she could have called herself Moana. But that's not what she wanted. She wanted it to look, quote-unquote, exactly like Moana's traditional clothing. And I couldn't create that for her. I wasn't going to buy the store-bought costume for her. And again, this is a conversation that, in fact, and I was widely misreported as banning this costume or refusing, and that's not what happened. I didn't refuse or ban anything. In fact, through conversation, my daughter made a different decision. And that is, again, the point of this, is conversation mm-hmm. and empowering young people to have the tools to talk about issues of race and inequity.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of kids just want to dress up as their favorite character. They're not really thinking about those things, and which is why you wanted to have the conversation. Race or ethnicity or other qualities may not matter much to them at this point. Lori, why do you think it's important for kids to understand some of the underlying issues when all they might want to do is be Moana?
So as Sashi said, I don't think that this is limited to Halloween. I think that this is actually about changing the way that our society works and looks together. So I think for my family in particular, and I think for many families who are people of color, we don't have the option to pretend that race is not a part of our lives. And so for us, this is an ongoing conversation around what does the world perceive around who my children are and who they might want to be versus who they see themselves as. And so I think this is actually part of a longer conversation that we've been having in our household and that we have with families that we work with and schools that we work with that really is about what does it mean to dismantle white supremacy in our culture. And for us, that is a longer conversation. So it's not just limited to this moment in Halloween. This is about, you know, Sashi mentioned book choices. This is about how children are perceived in schools. This is about the outcomes. This is about how people are perceived during interviews. So this is pervasive to our culture, and this is a way to have children in particular, but parents as well, have agency to change the world that we live in.
The word appropriation comes up quite often in your piece, Sashi. Talk more about how you see that playing out here. What is appropriation and what isn't?
Well, again, I mean, I think it's this line of trying on a costume as a culture as a costume versus thinking about the elements of a character. And I sort of described a way that I would have felt comfortable with my daughter creating a quote-unquote Moana costume. She didn't take me up on that costume. But what are the differences? Is that she wasn't taking on traditional elements of how our culture dresses, but rather thinking about specific things to her character. So there was a good example last year on Halloween where there was a little boy who was white who dressed up as Malcolm X. Of course, he did not change his skin color, or I would not be sharing this as an example. And he had also learned quite a lot about Malcolm X, and he was a hero for him. Apologies, that is my baby I have with me right now. my 5-month-old. Sorry for the extra noise. And in essence, what I want to say is that this child was honoring a person that he had learned quite a lot about. So it wasn't just trying on a culture as a costume. He was dressing, you know, looking at photographs and information about Malcolm X and, you know, books he carried and the look he had with glasses and what type of, you know, what type of suit he wore, et cetera. So it's not that this is impossible. It's just that this is about learning in a conversation.
It requires some thoughtfulness. Thank you, Will. We're going to continue our discussion. First, we'll break for some news. We're talking about cultural appropriation, specifically tied to Halloween, but in general as well, with Sashi Ferris and Lori Riddick, and with you if you choose to join us. We'll be back in just a moment. John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent on The Morning Show on Wisconsin Public Radio. John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent on The Morning Show. We're talking about the issue of cultural appropriation with Sashi Ferris and Lori Riddick. They blog and organize an online resource called Raising Race Conscious Children. And we also invite you to join our discussion, 800-642-1234, 800-642-1234. The email address is ideas@WPR.org. You can post to the Ideas Network Facebook page or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Again, that number, 800-642-1234. Lori, I know that you wanted to add a comment to our discussion just before the news break about cultural appropriation. Why don't you go ahead and do that?
I think as we talk about cultural appropriation, it's really important just to note that what we're talking about here is really disrupting this idea that what is white is normal. And if you turn on the television and watch sitcoms or if you read books, the majority of the characters still are white and speaking from a white experience. And so part of when we're talking about cultural appropriation is that we still otherize people of color. And so part of this goal is to talk about not assuming that what is white is what is normal, not assuming that what we are only talking about race when we're talking about people of color, but also talking about whiteness. And so I think this is part, again, of a larger conversation that we're trying to have with children at Raising Race Conscious Children about what does it mean to be a conscious consumer of media? What does it mean to be a critical consumer of media? And John, there was one other phrase that you shot out before we went on to break. You spoke about political correctness. And I just wanted to also say that I think with political correctness, some of the goal is to silence conversation and to not make people uncomfortable. And this actually is about having more conversation, about people asking questions when they're uncomfortable, about leaning into that discomfort. So I would just push back on that term as affiliated with our work, because our goal really is to have more and more conversation about race and power and privilege, and then ultimately for us, how to dismantle that.
We have we had a caller who couldn't stay on the line but wanted to make a comment. Jim from Oconomowoc says, it's good to teach kids they shouldn't look down upon themselves and raise others to higher levels based on looks. He says he's concerned that this is about giving non-white races an advantage, taking it beyond balance. Sashi, Lori, who wants to comment on that?
You know, that's a concern that we hear from parents frequently and from families, and I think there's a couple of things that I would say. One is that the majority of messages that we get overwhelmingly say that white skin is better than people of color. So I think it would be really hard for one conversation or one moment to counteract that. But I think that there's also a legacy of institutional racism that has pervaded in this country, and that's everywhere from housing policy to school policy, that is something that we have to actively acknowledge that we can counter it. I certainly don't want, and I know Sashi does not want, and our goal as an organization is not at all to put children who are white down or make them feel bad about themselves. We definitely want everyone to be proud of their heritage and culture while not also then declaring themselves superior or saying that they have an advantage. And right now, if we look statistically at how students progress through schools, at how people, the medium incomes, we know that people who have white skin generally in our country do better.
And I just want to add, John, I mean, I think for myself as a white person with 3 white children, I know that I'm going to instill pride about who they are in them, but I don't have to worry in the way that people of color do about their children's basic safety in the world. So when I'm raising my white children, another part of their identity is to raise them to be white people who know how to stand up and use their voice for justice. And mm-hmm. that is incredibly important to me as a parent.
Sashi, you've been getting a lot of attention since your blog post first ran. To that end, you've written a follow-up post. And among other things, you write that Halloween, which we're celebrating today, is an opportunity to have a conversation with your child about race, about power, and about privilege. If parents are looking to have that conversation today, where's a good place to begin?
So that is, again, really what RaceConscious.org is all about. And I started this conversation today talking about children's books. And we always in our workshops talk about starting in a place where it feels comfortable for a parent and where it's safe. So we don't need you to have this first conversation on a public bus with lots of people overhearing your conversation about costume choices. And if it's not today, that's okay. It can be a follow-up conversation tomorrow. But that this is an opportunity to think about different costumes that they either saw or wore and what it means to wear a different costume. And if Halloween isn't the subject, then maybe this is just the jumping point for a parent to say, you know what, I want to do that. I want to open a children's book, and I want my children to notice race, and I'm going to start practicing how to say it out loud in a way that feels uncomfortable and strange, because that is not how we were raised, but is a way to get this language on the table.
John, we often talk about having 100 one-minute conversations with your children about race as opposed to one 100-minute conversation. So this is a place where you can really, you know, to Sashi's point, use as a jumping-off point. And on our website, there are some strategies you can use in having conversations about race. So again, raceconscious.org. Visit us and, you know, get some ideas about how to start conversations.
Lori, do you find that kids really get it, or are we just confusing them?
So this is a question that we get often, and it really is. We couch conversations in ways that are developmentally appropriate, but what research tells us is that by 2 or 3 years of age, kids are already demonstrating bias for the culture of power. So although many times parents want to protect their children from conversations about race, kids are noticing race, and they're noticing that we're not talking about it. And when we don't talk about things with our children, they make up their own stories about what's true, what's good, and what's evil. And so for us, it's really important to scaffold that learning for our children rather than letting them come to their own conclusions by giving them some guidance and giving them our perspective on the world.
And John, this is Sashi. I think it just goes back to your question about Disney and messages, because if we let Disney tell us what beautiful looks like, and we don't interrupt that message, our children are very likely getting a message that is harmful for many, many children, that there is only one way to be beautiful, and that's to be white, thin, blonde hair, and blue-eyed. And that doesn't fit with many, many children in this country. And I would take issue with that. I want children to all feel beautiful, and I want all children to have this conversation in lack of models that are showing them that they are beautiful. I want that question interrupted.
Mm-hmm. We have a comment from Jeremy on Facebook who writes, in most cases, dressing up as a different culture for Halloween is more of an embrace of that culture than a criticism. What would you say to Jeremy?
So I would say that, you know, to what Sashi mentioned earlier, the goal of this is not to say never dress up as somebody different than you or to never, but to take it as an opportunity to learn about that culture and not just assume that the culture, the costume is the culture. So I think mm-hmm. when we look at movies and see a very small slice of Polynesian life or a very small slice of any culture, then we can overassume different things about that culture. So if this is an opportunity to do a longer, you know, to read books about and learn about, you know, Sasha gave the example of somebody learning about the specifics of Malcolm X, if somebody's learning about a specific
sure.
character in history, I think that's different than mm-hmm. just dressing up because you've seen a 10-minute clip of something that caught your attention.
And again, your website is?
RaceConscious.org.
Okay. Thank you so much, Sashi and Lori, for joining us today. I really appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Sashi Ferris is a principal blogger, blog editor, and workshop facilitator for Raising Race-Conscious Children, an online resource for talking about race with young children. And Lori Riddick is manager of partnerships and programs, blogger, and workshop facilitator for Raising Race-Conscious Children. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of WPR. I'm John Munson in for Kate Archer-Kent. We are going to continue our discussion in just a moment on this issue with a different guest who has a different perspective. But before we do that, I want to ask parents about, have you had this kind of conversation with your children? Are you going to let your little ones dress up as Moana for Halloween? And why or why not? And do you think it's that there is an appropriation issue here? And is this an opportunity to have a discussion about white privilege with your children? What is appropriate? What isn't appropriate? What do you think? 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234 is the number to call to join our discussion. My next guest is Kurt Schlichter, conservative columnist, author, commentator, and trial lawyer. His recent column on the website Town Hall is titled, Culturally Appropriate This, Social Justice Jerks. He joins me this morning on the Ideas Network. Kurt, welcome to the morning show.
Good morning, John. It's bright and early here in Los Angeles.
Oh, my goodness. No kidding. Well, major kudos to you for being willing to get up at, 4 o'clock in the morning to be with us here on the morning show. I really appreciate your willingness to come on at this time of the day. So based on your piece, you're pretty adamant that all of what we've been talking about here so far is a kind of political correctness gone wild and that people are just trying to crash the Halloween party. Is that kind of the main issue in your argument here?
Well, look, I think that's an overview, but I have both substantive and procedural problems with this. Substantively, I think the whole concept of cultural appropriation is ridiculous on its face. It's just silly. The second thing is the procedural. That is, what does this really mean? I don't think it's about cultural appropriation. I don't think a bunch of privileged white girls living in New York writing for Cosmopolitan have any true desire to somehow protect Polynesian culture. It's ridiculous. It's a scam. What it really is a power grab by otherwise powerless people to basically attempt to control and dominate normals by dictating to them and constantly nagging. And we see that again and again. And as time goes by, I think folks who are not, for lack of a better word, woke, are getting tired of it. I'm tired, and I think I speak for a lot of people, of a bunch of gender studies majors trying to tell me how to live. And as I said in the article, I have a counteroffer. How about I do whatever I damn well please, whether they like it or not?
I don't know if you got to hear any of what our guests had to say in the previous segment, but they were talking about having a broader discussion of issues like white privilege in our society. Are you saying that those issues aren't present and that we shouldn't talk to our kids about them?
Well, first of all, the whole concept of white privilege is simply ridiculous. It is another manufactured concept designed to empower a certain leftist progressive worldview at the expense of folks who are not within the rather small hothouse echo chamber where these ideas generate, largely on college campuses. But unfortunately, they're also spreading into society. The idea of privilege is so pernicious. It is so un-American that it needs to be called out. First of all, who's white? Who's white? Come to my family. My family's half Hispanic. Are we white? Are we Hispanic? What are we? We're nothing. We're not going to fit in some intersectional box to be categorized and told who we can be and who we can't. As far as the concept of privilege, what's described as privilege doesn't correlate with some sort of grant of authority or power. What it correlates with, or apparently, is hard work and effort over many, many years. Nobody came to me and gave me what I have because one of my ancestors 250 years ago dwelled near Stuttgart. It came because I started my career mopping out toilets at a Carl's Jr. restaurant in Foster City, California. So I became a private in the Army, eventually worked my way up to full colonel. That I started in school and eventually ended up with a couple of degrees. That I built a law firm from nothing, started on my credit cards, eating top ramen, and became a senior partner in a large law firm. So when somebody starts telling me about privilege, that is an attack on me, an attempt to devalue what I've done, to stick it into some sort of box that justifies their political worldview and their grab at power, because that's what this is. The idea of privilege is a way to take away the power that people have earned through their own efforts by instead, in a manner that is frankly racist in itself, categorizing them based on their ethnic or other heritage. And I refuse to be any part of it, and I think millions of Americans agree.
We have a comment from Mary on Facebook who writes, I think the clothing of ethnic groups should not be seen as a costume, but as traditional dress. She says we do tend to see white culture as normal rather than being one of many cultures. It took 9 years in Vietnam to make me truly realize that everyone has a culture and ours is not the norm or the ideal. What do you say to Mary?
To the extent that quote-unquote white culture, and there really is no white culture, there are a lot of subcultures, many of whom the people come from predominantly Caucasian areas, is generic, is simply because they're so ubiquitous. There are simply more Caucasian people than other people. That's simply a fact. That's not a conspiracy. But especially today, if you look at the way people live today, as opposed to 40 years ago when I was growing up, the walls have literally fallen. Children are not seeing race. They're not categorizing themselves the way that people might have decades ago. But do we recognize this change? Do we recognize this progress? No. And why don't we recognize it? Because to take away the racial conflict that these horrible ideas like cultural appropriation and privilege bring is to take away the power of the people who promote them. As I sometimes put it, you will never be woke enough. You will never satisfy these social justice warriors because they're not after satisfaction. This isn't a good faith argument. They're not at some point going to look around and go, okay, everything's fine. I'm going to move on. They're always going to find something worse. And now we're at the utterly ridiculous notion that a little girl wanting to be her Disney heroine Moana is somehow stealing or attacking or defaming Polynesian culture. The whole idea of it is ridiculous, and I think it's very important that we say so.
What I need to say is that we're at news time, but Kurt, hang on. We'll get right back and have more of our discussion. Our phone lines are filling up. Callers want to get in on this question as well. Our guest in this segment, Kurt Schlichter, conservative columnist, author, commentator, and trial lawyer. His recent column on the website Town Hall, called Culturally Appropriate This, Social Justice Jerks, is what we're talking about in this segment. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on The Morning Show on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're talking about issues of race and culture this hour on the program, and my guest in this segment is Kurt Schlichter, conservative columnist, author, commentator, and trial lawyer. 800-642-1234, the number to call to join our program. We have full phone lines, which is kind of what I expected when we were discussing having this topic for our 6 o'clock hour. Let's take some calls. Let's start with Steve in Cross Plains. Steve, welcome to The Morning Show.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Interesting topic. I guess, you know, I was probably 100% on board with the current guest who said that cultural appropriation is pretty much a sham, but that's not what I think anymore, and I want to give an example as to why. I think a lot of people have a hard time understanding this because it doesn't directly affect them. I want everybody that's, you know, maybe a rural person or a white person or maybe, you know, it doesn't fit the New York cosmopolitan writer demographic, and think about the movie Deliverance. Think about the TV show Hee Haw. Think about the character Cletus the Slackjawed Yokel on The Simpsons, okay? I'm a white rural male, and I play banjo, okay? So if you're anything like me, think about those characters and think about how they make you feel. And maybe that will help you understand what people are talking about when they talk about cultural appropriation. If you're playing a caricature, it's probably cultural appropriation. If you're playing a character, it's probably cultural appreciation. Appropriation versus appreciation, a very big difference. I think that's just an example I wanted to give because I think a lot of people just don't understand why people care because they've never experienced it. Okay. But if you've ever seen Hee Haw and it bugged you because they're making fun of you directly, maybe that'll make you understand. I don't know.
Okay, Steve, thanks. Thanks for your call. We get it. Kurt Schlichter?
Well, look, I disagree with Steve, though. I appreciate him giving a call. Look, caricatures are a part of performance, and they have been for thousands of years. You know, when you're doing comedy, and I've done comedy, you get on stage and you don't have time to build a character as you might during a 2-hour play. We use caricatures, and Cletus the Slackjawed Yokel from The Simpsons is actually quite a hilarious one. As for Deliverance, yeah, it has a very negative stereotypes of some mountain folk from the South, but then again, maybe some mountain folk from the South aren't exactly nice people. I think if you look at Deliverance, it really plays off of the fears, reasonable and unreasonable, of city people exposed to a different environment. So that's kind of a fish out of water thing. As for Hee Haw, that was designed for country folk, rural folk, I guess, as Steve would put it, who loved that show, and it was on for decades. Not my cup of tea. I'm a West Side Los Angeles guy, but I think people should be able to make their own art and utilize their own caricatures as they see fit. And that's what I'm saying about Moana.
Okay.
And all the rest. Do what you want.
Steve, thanks for the call. Let's go to Gary next, who's calling us from Merrill. Gary, go ahead.
Yes, good morning. I think a lot of times we confuse white privilege with white accomplishment. The founding fathers of this country were probably the greatest, most enlightened people ever walked on the face of the earth, and we have to give them credit. And it seems like colleges are doing their best to put these people down, these men that found the country, and we need to stop it because, frankly, we don't have anything to replace them with that could any time be any better. So,
okay. Gary, we get it. Thanks so much. Kurt Schlichter?
Well, look, I've always thought the idea of white privilege is a terrible idea on every level. First of all, it's substantively wrong. There is simply no such thing as white privilege. There are people with different amounts of social currency within society. Some people have some advantages, other people don't. It's not based on where your great-great-grandfather came from. The second thing is it is terrible because it undercuts the most important part of the American experience, which is that you are not defined by your race, creed, ethnicity, or other irrelevant factors, only your character and your commitment to hard work. It becomes a tool to bludgeon people and a tool to take power and a tool to avoid accountability. When somebody starts talking about white privilege, I immediately look for somebody who has not done the hard work to to get what they want that I've done. And I refuse to allow my efforts to be degraded simply because of where some of my ancestors came from.
Let's take another call. We're starting to get short of time. Troy is with us in Muskego. Troy, hello. Thanks for joining us.
Hello. Real quick, it's always interesting that you usually have Caucasians that where it doesn't affect them, so they're more, you know, they're more harder on white privilege. So it really doesn't affect them, and they're probably part of the privilege. The other thing is, I'm a Caucasian myself. I came from the bottom up. I came from poverty, and I got a degree. I got things. And one thing I noticed when I was doing that, especially coming from Wisconsin, coming from segregated cities, it's a lot easier when you're a Caucasian and you can just get a haircut, change your clothes. You can assimilate a lot easier. And so did the Europeans when they came to this country. It's a lot harder to assimilate when you can't change the color of your skin. And I think that's a very important part that needs to be brought up.
All right. Troy, we get it. Thank you. We're running out of time. I want to give Kurt a chance to respond. Thank you.
Well, look, I'm not sure what he means by assimilation. In our society today, and I'm not saying that was true 60, 70 years ago, but in our society today, the idea of where you came from simply doesn't matter. The way there's an exception, of course, on college campuses, in other liberal hothouse environments, where you came from seems to be everything because your identity is wrapped up into some sort of genetic heritage, something I find horrible and repellent. If you look at young people today, particularly, you know, kids in school, the ones who are portraying Moana, they're not even conscious of it remotely. This is not some of their experience the way it might have been for someone born even 40 years ago. So I disagree with the premise. I don't believe that the deck is somehow stacked against somebody simply because of where their ancestor came from.
Okay. Troy, thanks for the call. Let's go quickly to Anna in Eau Claire. Anna, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. I just wanted to say that I think that the speaker you have today exactly describes what white privilege is. I think that white privilege is the ability to turn off race and not talk about race. I'm a brown person, and I was adopted by white people, and I wasn't even aware of race until white people pointed it out, and that's a reason to treat me differently. I think that white privilege is something. I think that male privilege is something. I think that class privilege is something. And I think if we ignore it and don't talk about it, nothing's ever going to change.
Anna, thank you for your comments. Kurt?
Well, look, first of all, people do talk about it. And they talk about it, and they talk about it, and it's terribly destructive. It's terribly destructive because it undercuts what's vital and unique about this country, which is the ability of people of all heritage and all these other relevant factors to live together. Look, in the military, I walked through the ruined villages of Kosovo where people of different racial and ethnic groups, religious groups, decided that they would deal with their differences by murdering one another. And don't think that didn't affect my view. When I saw what happens at the bottom of the slippery slope where things like race and religion and ethnicity become more important than decency and character, it ends up in mass graves. This is a serious issue, the serious issue in our country. We do talk about it. In fact, we talk about it way too much because it is poison. Racism, and that's what I think discussions of white privilege and these other intersectional concepts are, a form of racism, are poisonous. And they're poisonous to our culture. And we need to stop it and start dealing with people as individuals. And that's the only way to avoid the fate of, frankly, most other cultures and most other civilizations.
Well, let's take another call very quickly. Anne is with us from Duluth. Anne, we're almost out of time.
Okay. The title of your article includes the word jerks. I just would like to know why ultra-conservatives always feel it necessary to name-call. I have strong opinions. I am perfectly able to make those strong opinions known without the use of name-calling.
And thank you. Kurt?
Sometimes you have to be aggressive. And I'm willing to do that. If we're going to do an abuse Olympics, I invite you to take a look at my Twitter timeline and the festival of death threats and obscenities that I endure every day. I don't care. I'm a tough guy, and I'll take it. When I see something is wrong, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it in clear, concise language that makes my point clear. I'm not here to name call. The reason I chose the title, I think, is because that sums up what the kind of people who presume to come and tell me that I have to go tell my little girl that she can't be the Disney princess she wants to be because she doesn't have the right skin tone. I don't think there's any word that better sums it up.
We have less than a minute left. How do we get to a point where we can have discussions on issues like this that seem to be less divisive?
Well, look, first of all, I don't have a problem with divisive. I'm a trial lawyer. I think it's important for arguments to clash and clash hard. Make your best argument. Put it in strong, clear terms. You don't have to be nasty about it all the time. Sometimes it's appropriate. Most of the time it isn't. And make your case. And let people judge. And I think I'm confident that the strength of the ideas that I think I represent, the idea that it's the individual and the individual's character and not these irrelevant concepts based on genes or heritage or religion, that provide a path forward to a society that's prosperous and that's just. And I think that there are a significant number of people who are using these divisions to empower themselves at the expense of our society's stability and our society's okay. benefit.
All right, Kurt, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining
us.
Thanks for getting up this hour of the day. Really appreciate that. Kurt Schlichter is a conservative columnist, author, commentator, and trial lawyer. He joined us from California this morning. This hour, the morning show was produced by Nyasia Ellison, Keely Bultina, and Chris Molina. Dean Knatter is technical director this morning. Michelle Johnson is our executive producer. It takes a village to raise a talk show. John Munson in for Kate Archer Kent on the morning show. More to come. Stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network.